Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 17th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, what would Sasquatch brew? Mark Emily from the Washington Homebrewers Association, or WAHA, joins us to talk about a competition to find out what would be the favorite beer of our favorite shadowy, hairy creature, besides Ernest Borgnine, by the way. Mark will also preview the upcoming National Homebrewers Conference in Seattle. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our 2012 Brewers Logbooks are also in stock. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and our Android app is also on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We are everywhere. You have less than a week to enter your data for the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment on Secondary Fermentation. The deadline is Monday, May 21st, less than a week away. Now, Gary Munch has joined Mark Raker in the early bird category of entrants. If you've got your experiment going, don't forget to go to basicbrewing.com/experiment to send in your data. Don't be like me and wait till the last minute to do it. So thanks to Gary and Mark for already sending in their data. At the time I'm recording this, the fate of the Alabama homebrewing legislation is still hanging in the balance. According to the American Homebrewers Association, today is the last day the Alabama Senate has to vote on the bill, and I'm hoping that the senators will approve the bill and send it on to the governor for a signature. But even if that doesn't happen, you guys down there shouldn't be too discouraged. You've come a long way, and even if you don't make it through this time, next time it should be easier. Remember, it took a couple of runs to get a similar legislation through the Utah legislature. So if it fails, and I hope it doesn't, don't give up the fight. I have a correction from last week's awesome interview with Jack McAuliffe. I said at that time that Boston Beer Company was the largest American-owned craft brewery, or the largest owned American-owned brewery, period. However, Jason and Greg wrote in to point out that it's Yingling from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, that is actually the largest now. And Greg also points out that Yingling is America's oldest brewery and family-owned and operated, which is pretty cool. And as a bonus, Greg says he lives only an hour away. So very nice. I stand corrected on that, and I appreciate the info. And anytime, you know, I misspeak on the show, feel free to send me an email, as many of you do. I'm glad you guys are paying attention. I've posted a new episode of Basic Brewing Video since the last audio show. Steve and I play around with a French press coffee maker to experiment with hops and other tasty flavors. And in doing so, Steve came up with a very nice flavor combination to go along with a porter. You'll have to watch the show to see what we found. Okay. Coming up on June 21st, homebrewers from across the country and around the world will converge on Seattle, Washington for the annual National Homebrewers Conference. We'll be there, too. Steve, Andy, and I will be taking in the sights and sounds of the conference and recording a bunch of them for you as well. We're also planning on meeting with homebrewers who have done experiments for us as well. This year, organizers wanted to come up with a beer that would be a reflection of the region, more specifically, a representation of the tastes of a certain tall, woolly creature. Well, Mark Emily from the Washington Homebrewers Association fills us in on the details. Mark Emily, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Great to be back on, James.
I feel like I sort of owe you an apology because the last time that you and I saw each other in person, I believe, it was at the barrel room at the Avery Brewery in Boulder.
Yes.
Was that the last place?
Well, we saw each other after that, but yeah,
okay.
It was a good time.
Among other things, I kept referring to Seattle as Portland. And I had entirely too much fun. That afternoon.
The barrels will tend to do that to you. So.
Between the altitude, the heightened altitude and the heightened alcohol content of the beers, that was a fun afternoon.
It's a Rocky Mountain high out there.
So we're going to come up and see you here.
I'm looking forward to everyone in the country coming out to Seattle in a few weeks. This is starting to scare me.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys sold out probably quicker than any other conference?
It was 2 days, and it was two crazy days of hearing the sales numbers, and yeah, it scared us.
So what's the final number?
After all said and done, there's probably going to be about 1,900 participants in the conference, which is it's close to what we had last year. The conference space that we have this year wasn't as large as we were able to get in the past. They booked it 2 years ago when they thought that the conference was going to have a semi steady growth, and it's gone obviously through the roof. So,
and you guys had to change the law to get the conference up there, and.
It's been a 5-year process of getting everyone together, changing laws, and then actually bringing people here to have a good time.
So no pressure.
No pressure. At the end of the conference, you may see me pass out, but it'll be good when it's all done.
Well, let's start off talking about this beer that you sent me. You guys have, I mean, there's always, you know, homebrew brewed for the conferences that are, these are handed out, you know, when you're getting your stuff, your goodie bag. And I assume that these are going to be handed out in the same way.
These actually aren't.
Oh, okay.
We have four other commemorative beers that are for the conference. This is just a special side project. This beer will be served by Sasquatch himself throughout the conference to attendees. So this is just one of many, many treats that we have coming at the conference.
So we have a worldwide audience. I mean, not everybody in the world, but, you know, everybody in the world has an opportunity to hear the show. So there may be some people in various corners of the globe that who don't know what or who Sasquatch is.
Being in the Pacific Northwest, we have this wonderful... It may not be just one, maybe a few hairy men, women, large stature, now walking around, Bigfoot, Skookum. He's got a lot of names. Just kind of a mischievous character that lingers in the forests, eludes photographers very, very well, and just a kind of guy who nobody's really sure of, but we all still kind of know he's around here.
In some parts of the world, he may be known as the Yeti, or similar creatures are known as the Yeti. In Arkansas, we have the Falk monster. So, you know, these sort of proto-humans walking around, and your Sasquatch is going to be carrying a keg of beer on his back. Is that the deal?
Yep, sorry. Our Sasquatch will be mobile with walking around with a keg of beer on his back throughout the conference. He volunteered for this. It was very kind of him to take some time out of his busy schedule. But he wanted to come and basically teach the rest of the world what it really takes to brew a Sasquatchian ale.
So you are describing a new category.
Yes. Sasquatchian ales are kind of difficult to put your finger on. They've They have a deep history. Obviously, Sasquatch wanted something to drink. He's in the Northwest. He saw over the horizon the local beer culture popping up and said, "I need to brew some beers too." So he went to work on coming up with his own beer style too.
So he had some assistance from some of the local home brewers up there as well, though.
Yeah, the Washington Homebrewers Association wanted to get a good idea of what it is that Sasquatch really, really like to brew. So that they put it out there to all the clubs out there. What would a indigenous woodland brewer want to brew with? How would he brew? What influences would he have? And so what would it really take to come up with a Sasquatchian style? And part of this is poking fun at our the Northwest's other major effort recently to get the Cascadian Dark Ale. The rest of the country may disagree or agree with that, but you can't take a Sasquatchian ale out of our hands unless you actually capture him and then transplant him into a zoo or somewhere else. These are the requirements.
So how did you, how many people took part in this?
So we had we put out the call to all the Waha clubs, and we had about 30 or so different people brew up 40 41-ish entries for the competition, which was a much larger turnout than we thought we'd get. When we initially put it out there, we were thinking to ourselves that, if a few people try this, that'll be great because there's a good chance that these beers will be largely undrinkable by human beings. They weren't intended to be drank by human beings, okay? So we got a lot more than we were expecting, and we put out a call to all the local judges too, and we've got a great, we had a, you know, a We had 20 or so judges come up to try to help us figure out what it is that embodies that style. So we asked the home brewers what it is that you think that Sasquatch should brew. And the first question I think that we would think of is what is it that he'd want to drink? So I guess, James, from what you know of Sasquatch, what would you expect Sasquatch to drink?
Well, it would have to be he's a big guy. So we would he needs a lot of energy for running around the woods. So probably a big beer, maybe.
Yeah, something to put a little hair in his chest.
Yeah, some carbs. There's a lot of woods around there. You would think that if he were making this himself, it would be probably over a fire. So, there may be some smoky character to it, something like that. It would have to be a hearty ale, I would assume.
Yeah, it seems like something he'd be pulling a lot of ingredients, obviously, from what's around him. So he's in the Northwest. He's got access to hops because they can grow wild out here. We produce malt out here too, so he's got a good selection of malt. But however he produces his malt, it's probably going to be suspect to whatever processes he can pull out. Maybe a little smoky again. Maybe it's probably going to be a little burnt if he's having to build his own fires. Probably going to be from the nice kind of mountain water or whatever it can come. So pretty clean water profile. And yeast. Now this is an area where you can go a few different ways. I mean, you could go completely wild fermentations, using whatever is kind of floating around in the air. The other aspect you could take is that he might be reculturing yeast from the bottles of the local craft brewers out here, in which case he's probably going to deal with a Cal Ale or something like that for most of his beers. It's a difficult process being Sasquatch and culturing.
So he might be able to find some bottle dregs
Yes, exactly.
by the streams,
Just
maybe.
hang out in some of the national parks, go hang out after the campers leave and see what they left behind.
So what were the more interesting entries that you got?
So yeah, for every person who entered, we we had them provide a recipe because we wanted to recreate this beer and brew it again on a larger scale. They're all going to be category 23s. So if it fit into a different category, it probably wasn't Sasquatchian enough for us. If it just was a smoke beer, that's probably not standing out far enough in the style. If it's just a vegetable beer, probably not quite Sasquatchian. But the most important thing that we asked them was for a description of why each of their beers are Sasquatchian. So they had to give a 3-5 sentence description on that. And that helped the judges come up with an artistic interpretation of where they were going with the beers. So we noticed a lot of most of the beers were brown. We got a lot of descriptions, a lot of stories behind each of these beers, a lot of personal experiences, how Sasquatch affected their life and changed their beers. I'm going to read one of my favorite beer profiles that was provided to us, which was from Trevor Nickel. He provided, "Me make beer in woods, use tree, malt, wild hops, and river water. Make over fire. Maybe hair got in too. Me not sure. Sasquatch like drink beer. Me sing better than sleep." So these are the range of expressions of the Sasquatchian style that we got. We got coffee in a lot of them, a lot of firm hopping from local ingredients. The average ones tended to be to brown to black. And then there was usually some sort of smoke that might make it into it, or some sort of herb or other spice that would find its way into these beers. And we provided all these beers to the judges. Well, first we gave all the judges the descriptions of all of the beers that they had, so they could kind of open their eyes up and get an idea of what was out there in terms of people, what they thought of the style. And then basically they all showed up. We talked for a little while about the difference. Their interpretations of what a Sasquatchian beer should be, and then they all sat down and started judging. And we gave them a modified BJCP score sheet that that has the normal aroma, appearance, flavor, mouthfeel. But given that the style doesn't exist, we knocked down the points for those, and then we gave a large category of Sasquatchness, which was how the beer embodies Sasquatch through brewing processes, ingredients, and general uniqueness to the style. And then they still had a kind of overall impression. And the goal was to find something that had a harmonious kind of Sasquatchy balance that represented the positive things that Sasquatch could bring to brewing. And was drinkable. another key constraint. So when you walked around through all the judging, you'd hear, you ask them, "So how do you feel about this beer?" And it's like, "Oh, this isn't Sasquatchy enough," or, "Oh, wow, this is Sasquatchy." And so all the judges they'd come through a consensus for their group, and they'd pass forward a few beers that the best to show panel would select from to kind of figure out what really does capture all this. The other thing that we asked them all to do was to sit down for their own purposes and write down what they thought the BJCP guideline for a Sasquatchian ale would be. So this kind of helped us kind of do a consensus of, after tasting all of these different beers, what are the most positive aspects of aroma, appearance, flavor, and mouthfeel, or the ones that we saw come through more often, and the ones that work together better to capture the Sasquatchian style.
So who won?
So,
or was
nobody
it a...
won technically. That's only technically. So our local panel of national and master judges taste through. I think there were a good 7 to 10 beers that made it or that were passed on, and they liked aspects of each of them. And they're like, "Oh, well, this one's got some nice smoke. Well, this one's got some nice the hops. This one really took the like an IPA-ish approach to it." And they all seem to be lacking some sort of a complete Sasquatchian quality. Until one of the judges said, "Take beer 3 and blend it with beer 6. And that they all decided was by far the most Sasquatchian competition. And there was a small part of my heart as a BJCP master judge that was watching a best of show around saying, and they're blending the beers, and this is the winner. However, we got the... So we decided this was the best example because it was a combination of Jerome Siep's Bigfoot's Brown Thumb, which was an Imperial Brown Sati. And this was inspired by, I think it was a Finnish process where they would line the bottoms of their mash tuns or kettles with boughs of like something like juniper to create a false bottom to some extent. And that would give a nice juniper character, which brought a really, really pronounced, strong wood character, which is something that we think, you know, Sasquatch would be brewing. He'd have to create a false bottom somehow. He'd probably use something like pine trees. So that was a beautiful aspect, and it was a big beer. It was that one was close to, I think, 1100, and had a nice firm bittering to it. But didn't have much smoke into it. And that's where Ben Bottoms and Brendan's Van Curen's Sasquatched, which was a brown ale with smoked squash, brought an extra character. It brought some really, really, really nice smoke character, like a slight vegetal note, but then also had a really nice diverse hopping in there as well, too. And together they came into this just nice balanced. It brought a nice harmonious aspect of each of the major characters of malt, of these extra characters of the hops, and then the wood and the smoke all into one nice package. And worked with natural ingredients, and really kind of captured this is what Sasquatch would brew.
Yeah, it was. It's a tasty, tasty beer. You were generous enough to send me two bottles, and I shared one last night with my wife. And she's not a beer geek, you know, but she likes good dark beer. And she said it was good. And she said smoky Christmas tree.
that's a pretty good way to look at it too.
I sat down and tried to be a little more expressive. So I said I wrote down evergreen and smoke and a little bit of anise and a little bit of dark fruits with sort of a dark chocolate background and maybe a little bit of coffee notes in there as well. I enjoyed it a lot. It gave me a fairly significant sensory memory. You know how you can walk into a place and smell something and immediately you're taken back to somewhere from your childhood? Well, this took me to deer hunting in Dallas County, Arkansas. And, you know, I'm not the biggest outdoor guy, but my dad, you know, took me deer hunting as a kid, which meant going into the woods, you know, 40-something degrees with not enough clothes on probably and, you know, sitting me up in a tree stand on the side of a pine tree, which essentially was a 2x4 stuck out at a right angle from the tree, you know, up there in, you know, being exposed to things. And you know, he would go run the dogs toward me. And so he would be sweating by the time he got to me and I would be freezing to death. So it doesn't sound like a positive memory, but it was.
And this is a beer that Sasquatch would be drinking as he watched you do that.
So that's where that smoke was coming from. It's from his brewing fire, his kettle fire.
Precise.
So yeah, I thought it was really, really good. Now, what's the ABV? Or talk about the recipe that you wound up with.
So basically, what we had those the three brewers who are part of the two batches get together and talk about how they wanted to integrate their recipes. And we had two opportunities for brewing this. So we had at our local store, Larry's Brewing Supply. One of our great homebrewers, Don Johnson, has a 1.5 barrel system that he loves to play around with and brew some great beers on there. And so he was willing to brew a version, and the local BJ's restaurant and brewery down at Tacoma was willing to take a stab at this too and brew it on their system with the brewer that comes up here, Derek Osborne. And so we Between the two batches, they took slightly different paths on how they were going to integrate the smoke. And so when people come to the conference, they'll be able to try both these different versions at different times and see how the different expressions kind of came through. So with the version that we brewed at BJ's, they actually put some smoked squash into the mash. For both of these batches, we had juniper boughs kind of throughout the process, as in hop backs and at the bottom of mash tuns and juniper berries throughout or thrown in there as well. But the kind of the core recipe revolves around depending on how much smoke you want in there, and if you're going to use the smoked squashes, okay, they're smoke Hubbard squashes too, to be specific. Either a around I guess from a homebrew scale, like around 6 pounds of a Munich, probably something like a light Munich. If you're going to go for just doing the non-squashed version, you'd probably have something like 5.5 pounds of Rauch malt. They use some biscuit to get a little extra toast character into there, flaked rye for just a little spiciness. So about 1 pound of each of those. A 1/2 pound of something like a Crystal 60 and another 1/2 pound of Crystal 80 to bring in some of that darker fruit characters. And then a 1/4 pound of Special B, which can also bring in some great, great, great dark fruit character. 1/4 pound of Carafa, which gives it that little kind of chocolate note or chocolate and coffee note, which, you know, occasionally Sasquatch might have to dump in the dregs of his coffee as well. He does go to Starbucks. He does have a frequent Starbucks card. And then an extra 1/4 pound of chocolate malt to provide a little extra roundness. And it gets a great, nice, deep mahogany color. It's not pushing into black, but nice, has a nice little light beige head. Then for hopping, did a mix of 1 ounce of Cascade, a 1/2 ounce of Centennial at 60 minutes, a 1/2 ounce of Cascade and Centennial at 30 minutes as well. So just looking to get some of that Northwestern character into the beer, but not really have it be decisively like this is going to be in a punch in your face IPA. Just enough of that to support everything else is going on with the firm bitterness and some hop flavor. And then at Knockout, you add in about a 1/2 ounce of juniper berries and coriander in the mash to give it that little extra kind of spiciness. And then also throw in some fresh cut juniper boughs, either in your mash or also you can knock it out, throw a little of those in at Knockout as well to steep and bring in that true woodsy character. And they ferment it with an American ale yeast, and it comes out to be around 1077 beer, finishing in the 1015 to 1020s, depending on where you mash. For mash, somewhere in just the mid-range, maybe around 152 or so. And it's around 7% or so, probably mid-60s in terms of IBUs. Firm bitterness, but it's supported by a nice complex malt and the wood character in there. It works, and then the smoke, it melds together nicely into something that is entirely drinkable.
So it was a tasty beer, and all the smoke of the beer that I had came from the smoked squash.
No, the one that you had was from Rauch malt.
Oh,
So the one that you the one of the ones that you'll be able to have at the conference will involve the smoked squash. We weren't able to get enough of that off before it was finished. Both these beers are extremely fresh. They've got about 1 month or so to kind of mellow and integrate. So that one will be just another slightly different. I've heard from the people watching the fermentation down there that is tasting beautiful as well. Just a nice integration of all the characters too.
Wow. Yeah,
For
I look forward to seeing what the smoked squash brings to the beer. Because the smoke in this one that I had was nicely balanced. Susan said smoky Christmas tree, but that's it's not, it's not a Christmas tree that's so smoky that it burns the house down. It's just a little bit of scorching from the live candles on the Christmas tree.
Yeah, they made the conscious decision not to go with peated malt. And I mean, even though, I mean, it could almost be reminiscent of burnt Sasquatch hair. But they just kind of figured that would push into a dark phenolic place a little too quickly. And the squash smoke, it did not. I mean, it picked up a slightly more reminiscent of peated malt note, but given that it was just carried over through the squash, it never was in a quantity reminiscent of putting way too much peated malt into a beer.
Wow. Well, it's tasty. The one that I had was tasty. I look forward to tasting the other one.
Yeah.
Now, what special things have you guys got planned up there for us in Seattle?
So, yeah, we're looking forward to people coming up. It's going to be held technically in Bellevue, which is across the lake from Seattle. Seattle, Bellevue, the two largest kind of cities up in this area. It's at the Hyatt Regency. For people who are coming in, it's going to be very easy to get to. There's a bus that leaves straight from the airport and goes to straight downtown Bellevue, and you just have to walk a couple blocks and you're at the hotel. So no need for a car. Don't drive for the whole week, and just come in and relax and have a good time. Bellevue itself is, since you're going to be in the downtown of a large city, you've got tons and great food and drink options all around you. Right by a mall. We've got grocery stores, drug stores. So it's not going to be a matter of trying to, if you want to go explore, if you want to get out and have a nice happy hour, you've got tons and tons of options right by you. The local breweries that we have up there, there's the Rock Bottom, which brews the multiple GABF award-winning Hop Bomb IPA. This is one of the best expressions of an IPA that you'll have out here. So I recommend stopping by that. And right next to that is the Tap House, which has 160 beers on tap. So that's your explore the Northwest from your seat option. That you've got.
Wow.
This is literally, once again, a 5 or 6 minute walk from the hotel center itself.
There's no need for buses this time.
No, you don't have to go anywhere in particular to get some great beer. For the people who do want to go into downtown Seattle, there is a bus for $2.50 that will take you straight from that transit center down to Seattle in half an hour. And we've got a self-guided walking tour, so you can go hit places like Pike Brewery, Elysian, Pyramid, and a few of the other great drinking spots that we have downtown. And then also for the people who want to go with their family, you've got access to the Space Needle, Pike Market. Original Starbucks is down there, Pioneer Square, where you've got kind of some neat underground tours, a bunch of museums like Seattle Art Museum, the Science Fiction Museum, the Experience Music Project, and then the whole waterfront right there as well. You can see the aquarium and just kind of the Seattle classic waterfront. and the nice thing is, we have our reputation for rain, and yes, this year we have had our fair share of rain. but the weather starts drying out in May. Right now we've got it 75 degrees outside, and it's beautiful and sunny, and in June it just gets drier. So it's going to be nice. Dress warm, bring a jacket, and at night it'll get a little cooler, but it's just going to hopefully be a nice, beautiful time for you out there.
So is it too chilly for shorts?
No, I'd still wear shorts. it's not going to be hot. You can wear shorts or pants. You'll be comfortable in either. Obviously, the conference center is going to be air-conditioned and all, but just do what it takes to make yourself comfortable. If you're kind of, for Seattleans, maybe probably still wearing pants just because we're always cold. or if it starts to get up to 70, we'll freak out and be running around virtually naked. So as they do at the Solstice Parade, which will be while we're down there as well. So, but yeah, it's just a great time to come out to experience the Northwest.
So what about the conference itself? What do you got going on?
So we've got another great line of speakers coming in to talk about all everything from your ingredients, your processes, equipment, how to build better equipment, whatever. Or we got some neat style talks, food, and one of the new areas that hasn't been at a conference for a while. We've got ciders. We've got some professional cider makers who are going to come out and give some talks about that and kind of. We have a lot of great apples in Washington, so we figured that was important to make sure we got into there.
Yeah, good point.
So Washington has a ton of small clubs, which is the reason we have the Washington Homebrewers Association. It's kind of the strength through many. And so for club night, we're gonna have around 50-ish, I think, total clubs participating. So. They'll be bringing some great beers. We have a lot of barrel projects going on. We are in wine country, so we get a lot of extra barrels out here. So look for some great sours. The hospitality suite or the Sasquatch Social Club should be having a good time. We'll be doing the two locations for that again. One of the other things we'll be featuring at the hospitality suite is we have a club, the Greater Everett Brewers Guild or Brewers League, who's making a specific effort to have single hop beers served continuously and rotating throughout the conference. So nice. If you want to come up and understand a particular hop, you throughout the course of every day, you can go try that. And we're going to have some experimental hops on there too, so you can see where things are going into the future. Donated the courtesy of Yakima Chief. They're great guys out here. For the regional commemorative beers, we went with a Northwest approach to this conference. We love our neighbors down in Oregon, and our friends up in Alaska who we would love for have them. We would love for them to have a conference up there, but it may be a little while before the rest of the country is ready to move up there. We wanted to incorporate all of them into this conference as well. So Rogue from Oregon's going to be brewing a beer. Alaskan's going to be brewing a beer. Black Raven, which is a very reputable brewery out here, is going to be brewing a beer as well. And Elysian took a very unique approach, and we're going to give the country the first conference single state varietal beer where everything is sourced from within the state. So we've got an all select Washington malt profile going to this. We've got local honey, we've got apples. It's obviously going to be a bunch of Washington hops, so it's going to be a very, very unique beer. We had the cider or the apple pressing for that this last week, and they brewed it, and it's going to be that'll be an interesting one.
Wow.
And then, yeah, basically there's, for people who haven't been in the Northwest, a lot of our beers don't make it out of the state. It's a very draft heavy state. So you'll get to see a lot of great breweries at Pro Night, come out for the pre-conference tours. There we've got tours heading all over the Puget Sound. We've even got tours going down to Yakima for the, to go tour some hop fields and processing facilities. And, it's just a great chance to get out of the area and see the mountains, see the sound, and enjoy yourself. And all those are kind of on sale through the ahaconference.org link. And yeah, just should be a good time. The AHA conference is always just a naturally occurring awesome event. So
yeah,
looking to seeing what people bring and what they're up for.
And was it as much work or more work than you thought it would be?
It was less work than I thought it would be.
Really?
So that's the good thing. The AHA did a really good job this year of assuming more roles. They've taken the control of doing all the cellar work. They've helped integrate usually there are two conference websites. This year we made a move to have one conference website so people could go to one place and find all the information that they needed. So it's been a lot easier. It's a matter of just having a lot of great people who are excited to work on it. And for anyone who is listening, who's a part of the committee, I love you guys. And they've just made this go over so well. It's just about having the right people who have got the right attitude. And if you've got that, it's not too much. So for anyone who is interested in organizing a conference, the biggest thing is just to find enough interested people to help you through and get enough people to start brewing some beer.
And next year it's Philadelphia, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they announced it early last year. Usually it's a secret.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But why did they do that?
they didn't want to announce two West Coast conferences in a row and not give the East Coast basically an idea that we did want to get back over to that coast.
I see.
It's just a matter of timing in terms of when people had bids put together. I don't think there was anyone who was really competitive for this year. Basically for 2013, they had a great bid from Philadelphia, and so it's going to be a great time out there.
Man, I can't wait. I can't wait to – I mean, it's just a few weeks away.
I know.
This year has gone – it does not seem at all like it that it's been almost a year since we were in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes – I'm getting old.
Trust me, for me, it's flying by a little faster, but – But yeah, so I mean, for anyone who's coming, please go out to the conference.org site, find out what's going on, look at the pre-conference stuff. If you're interested in volunteering and helping out, we can always use an extra hand. And generally at the conference, it's all about everyone having a good time and helping wherever they see someone who needs help. If you see something that's going wrong, give someone a hand or bring it up to someone, and we'll try to take care of it as quickly as we can.
Just look for the people with the wah-ha shirts on.
Yes. You can't miss the wah-ha onions. So, yeah, we'll have our Wahoo booth again, but yeah, a lot more Washington clubs out there as well too. So swing by the Bowen Club booth, and I'll be happy to pour any of you guys a drink.
Awesome. Well, Mark, it's been a pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you here just very soon.
Ah, yes. I'm excited as well. So it's been great getting to see you every conference so far, and it's going to be a great one this year too, James.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thanks a lot, James.
I can't wait. I'll post links in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com to the conference site and to a page on the Waha site, where you can find both the recipe for the Sasquatchian ale and to photos of the brewing process of both batches that they did. So you can see the squash being smoked, and you can see the evergreen boughs being put in the mash tun and such. Very cool. Thanks again to Mark Emily for the time talking to us and for setting those links up as well. And if you've purchased the Basic Brewing app, I'll go ahead and attach a PDF of the recipe on the app as well. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And don't forget to go to basicbrewing.com/experiment to post the data if you have been participating in the secondary collaborative experiment. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Rick Steves Silk Money Belt and Vet's Best Hairball Relief Digestive Aid. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine as well through our associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.